Hello and welcome to a special festive edition of the RHS Gardening Podcast. I'm Melissa Mabbitt and I'm a journalist on The Garden, the members magazine for the RHS. In today's podcast, we'll be talking to Wisley curator and houseplant devotee Matthew Pottage to get a sneak preview of the giant houseplant takeover, which will be filling the glasshouse at Wisley with exotic and tropical splendour from late January to March. And true to the spirit of the season of goodwill, we'll be paying a visit to Thrive, which is an inspirational gardening charity that is passionate about sharing the benefits of gardening with people affected by physical and mental disabilities. But first, have I mentioned it's nearly Christmas? For many garden lovers, including staff here in the office in Peterborough, Christmas is a fabulous opportunity to bring some of the fruits of the garden inside the house. As homegrown food, wreaths, table decorations, all homemade stuff from the garden, it's all very exciting and creative. Over a coffee and a mince pie, I asked some of my colleagues how they'll be bringing a bit of homegrown creativity to the celebrations this Christmas.
I'm Chris Young, editor of The Garden magazine. For so many of us, Christmas is about holly, and I'll certainly be welcoming holly into my gardening world and my home world, but it's not quite the sprig of holly in the hall or above the fireplace. Actually, I'm going to be planting a holly hedge and doing things properly.
I'm Gareth Richards. I'm features editor on the website. I'm going to be bringing ivy in from the allotment. So I've let some ivy grow up the side of the shed and into the hedge, and once ivy gets up into something, its growth habit changes. It becomes what's called arborescent. So you get this nice shrubby growth and it flowers, great for wildlife, lovely berries, and obviously beautiful glossy evergreen leaves. So I'm going to be trimming a bit of that, bringing that in and putting it above the fireplace.
So I think I've got the right person to talk to you here, because haven't you gone kind of crazy with your Christmas decorations from the garden, or have I got that wrong?
Well, no, I cheat. I tend to use a lot of plastic flowers or fake flowers,
but I treat
them like Christmas decorations. So I have big vases of stuff, so there might be gold-leaved holly, and I've got these golden plastic phasalis things that I use. So I do that. I'm a bit lazy. If I was had a bit more time, I probably would do more from the garden. I usually do bring in some holly from the garden.
It's got to be done, hasn't it?
Holly
and ivy. If you can get really thin filament lights now, which if you wind it around, you can't see the wires very much, and you just get the lovely twinkly effect. Yeah, it's really, really good. Well, most years I bring quite a bit from the garden, and I do a wreath. Although I feel like this year I've reached peak wreath, because I feel like everybody in the world did a wreath making workshop or is doing a wreath making workshop at the moment, and they're great. But I might not do one this year because I'm all wreathed out.
Yeah.
But I have bought in some seed heads, dried seed heads, things like opium poppies and things like that. And just, you know, the skeletons in a vase inside is quite nice. Not necessarily that Christmassy, it just looks nice, really. The biggest thing I've ever done was I cut a big apple tree branch and then I spray painted it copper and suspended it from the ceiling then hung baubles off it and put filament lights on it as well. That was like an all out.
Was it good?
I mean, it was good. It was good. It was maybe a bit much, I would say, but it was quite impressive. Like, we don't normally have Christmas at home. We normally go to relatives, but that year we were doing it at home. So I went big and it took up kind of the whole dining room. So I probably wouldn't do it again, but it was good. It was good.
The other material I just use moss from the lawn.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll scarify the lawn and collect that moss up. And then I use that because quite often I buy prepared bulbs. So I might have hyacinths or I might have paper whites or bridal crown, which I actually prefer.
Yeah, you can't beat those.
And I just pack the moss around the top of those plant pots because it just looks so much prettier.
It's just natural. It's a nice natural decoration, isn't it?
And it's out of the lawn, so it will just be chucked out anyway. Yeah, it's not quite as nice as the sphagnum moss, but that we know that you shouldn't really be using that. So, the stuff out of the lawn works just as well, really.
Yeah.
So, I don't overdo the Christmas decorations from the garden, but it's nice to have something.
I think in the past I've always gone down the kind of road of spray painting things from the garden.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do that less because I think actually I'm not that comfortable with whether that's good for the environment or not. So I've gone for
more kind of bare stems, but I found corner stems are brilliantly colourful anyway. Mm-hmm. So I've used the kind of green Corlix and Midwinter Fire and, mm-hmm. and trimmed the stems and then made them into stars.
Oh,
they look a bit
nice.
Pagan-y, witchcrafty.
Oh, okay.
If you're not careful, you've got to get them quite neat, otherwise they start looking a little bit like, yeah, something out of a horror film. But yeah, if you get it nice and neat and you get the right colours, quite bright colours, they do look quite festive. So that's what I've done this year.
Cool.
You can find links to more plant-based creative Christmas ideas on our programme page at rhs.org.uk/podcast. Online, you can also find details of some of the events that are being held this month in our RHS gardens, including our exciting programme of winter walks and illuminations for the festive season. It's a welcome taste of fresh air if you've been trapped in the house all over the festive period. Matthew Pottage is the curator of RHS Wisley in Surrey. I asked him about what's been catching his eye in the garden.
Winter at Wisley is a really magical time because I think you appreciate the structure and the bare bones of a garden. It's a real test for any garden or landscape to look good in the winter time. And Wisley has such a beautiful collection of trees. Some of those are evergreen. We've got some really stately conifers and some beautiful layouts of both hard landscaping and lawn areas and some of the ponds and lakes. And you really kind of sense the atmosphere, the heart, the bones of a landscape. And I always think that's so beautiful in the winter time. And also some of the trees, I mean, some of them are more beautiful in the winter time. So like the magnificent Barotia persica that's by the Jellicoe Canal, the Persian ironwood tree, multi-stemmed example, loads of crisscrossing horizontal branches. You don't appreciate any of the structure when it's in leaf in the summer. I don't think the leaves are that exciting in the summer. They are in the autumn. But in the winter time, when you appreciate the branch structure, it's just a marvel. So I always think it's a lovely time to go around and gawp at the trees. In the winter time, the winter walk is probably one of the major attractions, and that's the circular route between the food hall, the main cafe, and the glass house. And that takes you around the area known as 7 acres, around the lake and around the pond. And there is a lot of colour there. So big plantings of cornus and salix, you know, both willows and dogwoods for the winter stem colour. Lovely different barks of things like Acer Davidii. There's one called Viper, which is a really beautiful snake bark maple is featured. And then heavy on winter scent and winter flowers. So iris reticulatas, hellebores, edgeworthias, shimonanthus, it's all there. And it's a really beautiful thing to experience. So one plant that's new to us that we're trying on the winter walk this year is an Edgeworthia cultivar called Winter Love or Winter Lieb. And it is supposedly an improved cultivar with a larger flower and a more compact, denser branching habit. The plants we've got are full of promising bud, and I'm looking forward to seeing those open and also seeing how they compare to Grandiflora, which also has a very good large flower head, which we have well represented on the winter walk. So look out for that if you're coming to see the garden in probably late January. They normally kick off with their flowering.
Glow at Wisley runs until the 5th of January. On January 25th, the Wisley Glasshouse sees the launch of the Giant Houseplant Takeover. I am really excited about the Giant Houseplant Takeover in the Glasshouse. Matt Pottage has done some fantastically interesting things with houseplants in his own home. I'm really hoping we'll get a taste of that, but on a massive scale in the Glasshouse. It's going to be good. I asked him why he thinks houseplants are having such a resurgence in popularity.
So houseplants are having this real boon again. They're really, really in vogue. And I think it's because not everyone has access to a garden. Not everyone has a lot of space to grow things, say, on their front doorstep, in their front yard. And in central London, you know, even that's a luxury. So sometimes you only have the indoors and your windowsills or a window box. And the other thing is, you know, if you want to be gardening or working with plants throughout the year, you know, that isn't always possible in a garden, not like it is with houseplants. So you can be tending to things throughout the year. You really, really, I think, get value for money out of houseplants. You know, you're not in your garden as probably as much as you are in your house. So, you know, whatever's on the kitchen windowsill, you're looking at it a lot, or you're seeing plants in your bedroom a lot. They really enhance your day-to-day living. Not only that, they are lovely to have around, you know, the aesthetic benefit of greenery and the calmness it brings. And there's almost a houseplant for every situation, you know, the shadiest flat or very sunny windowsill, or someone that goes away a lot and tends to leave the heating off so the house gets freezing, or someone that's too good at watering, or someone that never remembers to water stuff. You know, there's nearly a houseplant for every situation or every keeper. So, you know, it's something that's so accessible, and I think people are really grasping that. People are doing really fun, creative things. Again, just look on Instagram. There's just houseplants everywhere. And it's really inspirational. So we really wanted to share that and build on that at Wisley, because while everything in the glasshouse is a houseplant, they are tender plants under glass, the way we're growing them traditionally in the beds and borders isn't really what you would do at home. You know, you don't have open bed soil in the middle of your living room with a cheese plant growing 10 metres up a pole like we do in the glasshouse. So, you know, it is about bringing the scale back a little bit. And like I say, doing something a bit more off the wall than just a pot plant on a windowsill. Understanding your space and your light levels is a massive starting point. So, you know, knowing which direction your windows face. If you don't know that, you know, look at the compass on your phone. And if you've got a south or west facing windows, chances are you've got a sunny spot, you'll be able to work with things like cacti and succulents. If you're north or east facing, chances are you're going to be better with leafy plants, ferns, things that prefer lower light levels. And I think a real rule of thumb here, even if it feels sunny, usually your light levels are quite low for what a plant wants. So, you know, if the room feels gloomy to you, it'll probably feel like a cave for your plant, because succulents are so fashionable. You often see very etiolated succulents, which means they've been drawn up by the lack of light. They get tiny leaves, the stem goes elongated, they lose all sense of their shape and form. And that's very much, even though someone's got it on the windowsill, the light levels just aren't high enough. So know your light levels and then start with things that are quite forgiving. So something like a clivia, for example, will take fairly low light, well, very low light levels, actually. If the heating's left off, it'll take cold. It'll almost take a bit of a frost. So something like that is very tolerant. If you give it too much water one week, it can cope. If it goes completely dry, again, it can cope. And then start building up from there. If you become more confident, try different ferns. Asplenium nidus, the bird's nest fern, is a really good forgiving fern. If it starts to dry out, the leaves just kind of wilt and go a bit see-through. When you water it, they go green again. They'll stand back up, if you will. If you choose something like a maidenhair fern, it goes crispy really quickly, and then you lose all the leaves. So start with something that can rehydrate itself if you forget to water it. And then if you do have a really good sunny windowsill, cacti and succulents are great. They're really easy. Some of the aloes are really good. The partridge breast aloe, aloe variegata, is a lovely thing and quite easy and straightforward. And I guess one of the most bomb-proof plants which can do both sun and shade is the mother-in-law's tongue, Sansevieria. There's actually quite a few different interesting forms of that around now with different variegations, different leaf habits. Some are like little rosettes. Some have much taller, thicker, almost cylindrical leaves, and God, they're almost indestructible. They are from warmer climes, so probably the easiest way to kill that would be to leave it outside when there's a frost or something, so don't do that. You know, they are a really good basic one to start with, and if you're killing a mother-in-law's tongue, it's almost quite an achievement. I think people should have houseplants just because of the enjoyment and the benefit they can bring you. That the feeling of tending something, raising something, watching it grow, being part of your surroundings, air purifying qualities, and the benefits of having greenery around you. And it just brings a sense of calmness. It's something that isn't instant. It's not something that needs you to look at a screen, enter a password, something that's demanding updates from you. It will just sit there, and it's, to be honest, they are easy to have something living in the house, and then to watch the seasonality of it, if it's a plant that flowers, just the enjoyment that it will bring.
The Giant Houseplant Takeover in the Glasshouse at Wisley runs from the 25th of January to the 1st of March. And if, like many of us, you're mad about monstras or passionate about peace lilies, be sure to have a listen to the latest edition of our sister programme, The Garden Podcast, where we speak to one of the Glasshouse team who specialises in the weird and wonderful aroid family. As Christmas is a great time to focus on goodwill and thoughtfulness, we're going to conclude today's podcast with a visit to an inspiring charity, Thrive. Thrive uses gardening to bring about positive changes in the lives of people living with disabilities or ill health who are isolated, disadvantaged or vulnerable. Our producer George visited their centre in Reading recently to meet some of those involved and to hear how Thrive's work is making a real difference to individuals, families and communities.
My name's Catherine Rossiter. I'm Chief Executive of Thrive. Thrive is the Gardening for Health charity. So we were established over 40 years ago by a horticulturalist who also worked with young people with learning difficulties. He found that when you took those young people out into the garden, he saw some quite amazing changes in their behaviours and their abilities and what they were able to achieve. And he wanted to explore that further and to set Thrive up as an organisation that would help other people understand how they can use gardening and horticulture in a therapeutic way with lots of different client groups. Basically, what our staff do is work with an individual to understand what it is that individual wants to achieve, but also to understand what limitations that person may have. They will then use the gardening context, use the garden itself, to help that person reach those goals. And those goals may not be garden-related, but there is such a wide range of things that you can do in a garden and with gardening that we can adapt those in some way or another to help that person achieve a goal. So it may be a more social orientated goal for some of people who want to be able to build their confidence to sit and have a conversation like we're having. That can be quite difficult for somebody. So the therapist would work with that person in the garden setting and manage that social interaction, encouraging that person to have a conversation, encouraging them to interact with other people, to talk about what it is that they're doing. Other side, maybe somebody with a physical disability, and we'll look at how we can build a set of tasks that helps them work on, say, a particular strength or their mobility, so they don't realise they're actually making progression a lot of the time. So what we're saying is that the garden itself is a resource that can be used. We can adapt the gardening tasks, we can adapt the tools that we use to engage an individual in those gardening tasks to help them actually achieve a goal that they want to achieve. It's very hands-on, and there is a huge range of different tasks that can be done. Things that grow very quickly, things that take a longer time to grow. There's tasks to be done all year round. It's not just, we don't just garden in the summer. A lot of our clients at Reading really enjoy the leaf sweeping and creating compost, that sort of the more physical hard work that goes. So yes, there's always something, there's always some job to be done in the garden, and whatever somebody's particular interest, there's something that we can grow that engages them.
My name is Jan Brody. I'm the senior horticultural therapist here at Trunkwell Gardens in Reading for Thrive. So we're in the main gardens here. We've about 3 acres of gardens, and they're all split up into these smaller example gardens. So it makes that 3 acres a bit more manageable and increases the horticultural diversity within the garden. Just over here to our left, we've got the potager garden, and this is a great garden for the adaptation of the garden to take away barriers so people can really get involved, so they can do the gardening for themselves. So our apples and pear trees here are all kept about 4 foot high. And that means our wheelchair users, they can come along, they can get involved in the harvest, and much, much more meaningful for them to take home a bag of apples or pears that they've picked themselves and you pass them on to their family than if somebody does that for them. And then it's got raised beds there. So again, we have lots of people who come here with mobility issues, find it hard to get down at the ground. We could perhaps give them an adapted tool so they could, say, weed, for example, from standing. But really, we want them to get their hands in the soil so that the raised beds there lifted up to a height that's manageable for most people. And also, it's a double-skinned brick bed there. It means that if people lack the stamina, they can sit down on that raised bed as well, take a rest, perhaps do 5-minute chunks of work. And it means that they can stay with the group. They don't have to return inside to have a rest. And they can benefit from all these passive benefits just from being in the garden. So right now, we're currently enjoying this beautiful winter sun, which is quite warm without the wind. And there's all the birds around in the summer. The insect life might just take your interest. Just notice some of the other flowers that are around you. So you don't actually have to work too hard to get the benefits. Sometimes it's great just to be in the garden.
Take somebody who perhaps had a stroke and is struggling to regain strength in their hand, in their grip. So we may start with a very simple task that doesn't involve them having to do too much with that. So that may be breaking up some compost or something which is just getting them using that hand, breaking some of the lumps out. and then we may move them onto, as they gain some strength, something that requires a bit more fine motor skill, so that sort of pinch movement. So that may be doing a bit of deadheading, where they're actually then having to use their hand a little bit more. And then you may move them on to doing some seed sowing, where actually they're needing to use just a finger and a thumb to pick up a seed and put it in. So different sorts of tasks are easier for someone to do depending on their level of ability. And what the therapist will do will make sure that that person's engaging in the right sort of task on that improvement journey that the person's on. We know that when people are in a natural environment, they tend to feel calmer. That helps with them making improvements in their lives. A lot of the skills that people are learning are very transferable. So that example of somebody with improving their grip, we're not just helping them improve their gardening processes, but hopefully when they get back home, they're more able to do jobs around the house because they're building up strength in that hand, maybe then being able to use scissors or secateurs, you know, those sorts of things. Almost on a daily basis, the therapists are saying, you know, so-and-so has done something today that they weren't able to do previously. For that individual, it has huge, great implications.
Everything's meaningful. So when people are occupied here, it's meaningful. It's not a task for the sake of doing it. You're nurturing something. You're bringing something on. One of our clients, she wanted to be able to tie laces.
And that symbolised for her, her constant dependency on her parents and others for caring.
And so she learned to do that through tying in runner beans onto their frames. So quite a repetitive task, but she wasn't just untying her shoelace and tying the same shoelace again. Each tie had a meaning to it. And so through doing that, she built up the dexterity, the confidence to tie the beans onto the poles, onto the support structure. And then she realised that could translate to her shoelaces.
And just being able to tie her own laces when she comes into Thrive in the morning or any day, she doesn't have to keep asking other people to do it. So that's given her a much greater feeling of independence and empowered her to then to move forward in other areas of her life to be more independent.
She articulated it beautifully. She said what that's enabled her now is she can go into town and she can go to a shoe shop and she can choose any of the shoes that she wants. She's not restricted to the Velcro anymore. So it was a real normalisation that took place through learning that skill in the garden.
Our thanks to all at Thrive in Reading. We'll be returning to Thrive in January to discuss gardening and sight loss. We'll explore how you can enrich the texture, scent and sound of your patch to create a multi-sensory garden. Plus, we'll hear simple practical tips and techniques to make doing the jobs in the garden you love easier if you're blind or have deteriorating sight. It's really inspirational for everybody. Don't miss it. Well, that's all for today. We'll be back in a fortnight with a look back at some of the highlights of 2019 on the RHS Gardening Podcast. Until then, from me, Melissa Mabbitt, and all here in Peterborough, we wish you a very Merry Christmas. Goodbye.